Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode 339. In the news this week, I just want to apologize. First of all, our last episode, number 338, had some incredible blank spots in the audio for a few hours. Many thanks to a brother who went ahead and let me know about that. It was really a weird instance. Not sure what exactly happened, but it is fixed. So if you put up with it, you actually missed a little bit if you didn't re-download it. So go back and check out 338. I did fix it within hours. So possibly if you heard it through iTunes, you have an older version, you'd want to just go back, delete it, and then resync it. Big apologies. I know that's a hassle.
If you're listening on Stitcher or on the app, Podcast Source app,
then you should be fine. It updated real time.
All right, some exciting news. If you guys ever wanted to go to Europe for a Masonic tour, now's your chance. There's a group of Masons who've put together a little something, and it's a Masonic tour of Scotland and England. So you can join the Midnight Freemasons founder Todd E. Creason and the senior contributor Greg Knott on this once-in-a-lifetime 10-day Masonic tour of Scotland and London. They're leaving September 12th, and they're coming back on September 22nd. It's 2018, this year. It is arranged by Inspiration Destination Travel. The trip includes attending the meetings with the Grand Lodge of Scotland and the United Grand Lodge of England. The trip price is $4,479, which includes the airfare from Chicago to New York or D.C. Other cities are available if you request. Your hotel, you want to book early, though, because space is limited. Todd wrote a little bit about it. He just said, I'm really looking forward to this trip. I've wanted to go to Scotland and England for years. This trip includes most of the things I want to see, like Edinburgh Castle, Roslyn Chapel, Warwick Castle. But there's a lot of Masonic history in those two countries, and this trip was organized just for Freemasons. And there is a lot on this trip that will appeal specifically to Freemasons. In fact, we'll be meeting some very high-level Masons in both of these countries. We'll be visiting, touring, attending meetings with the Grand Lodge of Scotland and the United Grand Lodge of England. There will be some credential requirements to attend these tiled meetings, obviously, so you'll want to make sure you bring your dues cards and whatnot. Attending those two meetings alone is a rare opportunity for few Masons in the United States that will ever experience it. So the dates again, September 12th through the 22nd, 2018. Pricing includes airfare, hotel, selected meals, and I'll be telling you more about this as we get closer to the event in the next few months. But I hope you join us on this once-of-a-lifetime trip, and be sure to book early. There's very limited space, so get registered today. And you can do that by visiting masonictours.blogspot.com. Top right corner, click to register. There's a full itinerary. You guys really should think about going. All of the information on the travel company and how to register is on the website. I'm trying to go myself. I'm just saving up the money. I told my wife about the trip, and she said, you have to go. I said, yeah, I got to make it happen. So that's what I'm going to try to do. I'm trying to make it happen. So again, this is this year, so we've got about 4 months. And as I alluded to last week, I did end up securing that brother to come on the show and do a little something for us. That brother is illustrious brother Christopher Hodapp. Chris wrote a great piece the other week, and I had hoped he would either let me read this piece on the show, which he's always been cool with, or if he would maybe consider reading it on the show for us, which he did. So this week we have illustrious brother Hodapp reading a piece for us that he wrote on his blog, which I felt was just amazing. That's Freemasonry for Dummies. If you guys have ever frequented that website, I hope you do. It's like the best place to get Masonic news and updates, and Chris has some great opinions that he puts out there, and just a great all-around website. And we'll go into that in just a few minutes. But we've also got illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison on the program this week for another amazing segment of the Masonic Minute. And we'll wrap it up with a neat piece that I found about Freemasonry and the topic of immortality. So with that, let's get right into this piece.
John Ruskin wrote, "What we think or what we know or what we believe is, in the end, a little consequence. The only consequence is what we do." I came across a lament from a brother Mason over the weekend, and I'd like to share it with you. Quote, "A half a century ago, and I'm told that even today in some areas, Grand Lodges were ultra-conservative, ruled by what properly be called cliques, due to the practice of the Grand Masters appointing their prodigies at the bottom of the official line, who, with the passage of time, eventually became Grand Masters of Grand Lodge, and in turn appointed future Grand Masters, thereby denying the craft, in general, the right of selection of their governing officials. This undemocratic policy may have resulted in securing some outstanding men as Grand Masters, but it also guaranteed obtaining many incompetents in that office, whose only qualification was being that fortunate appointee of a friend to whom a permanent obligation was obvious. Since it was custom to appoint past Grand Masters as chairman of the more important committees, and to elect them as Grand Treasurer and Grand Secretary, the entire operating fabric of Grand Lodge was a closed shop. And woe betide him who would seek to disrupt the plan. Change was opposed by the vested interest, and innovation was not only frowned upon, but it was usually bitterly contested and prevented. A new idea had to have more than merit to have a chance of being adopted. Support had to be secured from the past Grand Masters, which was difficult and seldom obtainable. Change not the ancient landmarks was more than a cliché, but was the rallying cry of opposition by the majority of the entrenched leadership. Unquote. It sounds so familiar, doesn't it? It was written 44 years ago, back in 1974, but it was really referring to the period of the late 1920s when Freemasonry was going through an enormous explosion of popularity and membership gains, what we think of today as its golden age. But it could have been written today just as well. So who wrote these words? Well, most Americans have never heard of him these days, and yet he was one of the most important and influential members of the fraternity during the 20th century, and perhaps of its entire 300-year modern speculative history. Allow me to introduce you to J. Raymond Chute II of North Carolina. And the reason he's so important is because he didn't just sit on the sidelines and bitch and moan and expect somebody else to improve the fraternity for him. Chute loved ritual and was endlessly fascinated with the huge variety of Masonic rituals and systems that had developed around the world after 1717. In 1930, he and a group of North Carolina brethren founded North Carolina Lodge of Research No. 666 AFNAM, believed to be the first American lodge of that type, a research lodge, to be formed. They nicknamed it No Calor to make the name less cumbersome, and they also adopted that moniker as the name of their published collection of papers. And then they went to work. Chute was still in his 20s when they began. He had joined the fraternity at 21 and became master of his lodge just 3 years later, in case you think that's a new development these days. In later years, he called the group of brethren who worked with him at the time the Innovators, and their research lodge soon organized a correspondence circle to build their network of interested Masons far beyond the borders of just North Carolina. In a world long before internet communications and fast, cheap overseas travel, even in an age of difficult international telephone conversations, Chute and the Innovators scoured the world for lesser-known Masonic degrees and organizations. They collected their findings under the aegis of Lodge 666, and those documents and research materials today can be found in the Chute Masonic Collection in the Southern Historical Section of the Library of University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Out of that group clustered around that one single lodge sprang the overwhelming majority of the smaller, more specialized Masonic bodies in North America, most of which still meet each year at Masonic Week near Washington, D.C. each February. Many of them were imported from Europe, while a few were homegrown, or at least American hybrids. But consider the scope of this list. The Allied Masonic degrees, originally the supreme quarry of the world Masons of Tyre, Knight Masons of Ireland, Knights of the York Cross of Honor, the Red Cross of Constantine, Societas Rosicruciani in Civitavis Federatus, the Priestly Order of the Temple, Knights Beneficent of the Holy City, the Operatives, the Order of the Bath, the Society of Blue Friars. And just as a bonus, they also helped to corral various conflicting chapter and council degrees that were floating around in the U.S. into a more standardized format. For the stray rituals that wouldn't fit anywhere else or that were regarded as too obscure or defunct, they also formed the Grand College of Rites to publish those rituals in their annual collectiona. And they accomplished almost all of this between 1931 and the mid-1940s. Note that out of all those organizations, only one, the Priestly Order of the Temple, is not alive today. All the rest are still very active. In fact, the Allied Masonic Degrees has been the fastest growing Masonic body in the U.S. for the last 15 years, and the SRICF is expanding rapidly as well. The innovators included Masons who were enormously active and influential during their time. J. Hugo Tash, Harold Van Buren Voorhees, Dr. William Moseley Brown, Ray V. Denslow. Many of them were also involved with writing articles for the Builder magazine, which went defunct in 1930. So Shute was far from alone, but he was the glue that bound them together. He was the one who always wanted to know more, discover more, accomplish more. And that's why I'm telling you about him now. We're almost 80 years beyond the days when Shute and the innovators accomplished their incredible feats of research, organization, and building. And we're living off the fruits of their labor. No more and no less than those of us who take for granted the majestic temples our brethren built for us in the 1920s. They were dreamers, builders, visionaries, storytellers, and leaders. They expected the very best of the fraternity, and then they went out and they made it happen. In my new book, Heritage Endures, about Indiana's Masonic Bicentennial this year, I talk about our great achievers and visionaries from our own past. In particular, I write a lot about Dwight L. Smith and all that he accomplished and left behind between 1940 and 1993. His two works, Whither Are We Traveling and Why This Confusion in the Temple, continue to challenge and inspire Masons today, more than 50 years after he wrote them, and they were mere footnotes to his enormous Masonic accomplishments. All of those men are gone now. It's a new age, new century, new horizons to conquer now. And that means one thing. You and me and all the rest of us today are today's Dwight Smiths and Ray Shutes. It's up to us now to take up the torch, to lead, to build, and to see a vision of what can be, instead of just strip mining our own past and living off of what we inherited. Just as important, it's up to all of us to record what we've lived through, to document and preserve those events and past achievements before they die with us, so that others can learn from what came before. I woke up earlier this month to discover I'd been a Freemason for 19 years, and I've seen so much come and go in what seems to me to be just a tiny sliver of my own lifetime. We've lived history ourselves, even when we didn't realize it at the time. You and your lodge and your experiences are important, because history is what happens when you're not paying attention. Texas Congressman and Speaker of the House Sam Rayburn once famously said, "Any jackass can kick down a barn, but it takes a carpenter to build one." Ray Shute was impatient and expected his fraternity to be better than it was in 1924. So instead of carping about the leadership or the good old boys or his grand lodge or their egos and its politics, he decided to go out and improve Freemasonry. And he convinced a group of like-minded brethren to do the same. They didn't expect somebody else to present them with a pre-digested, ready-made course of Masonic enlightenment. They didn't complain about the lack of esoteric education in their lodges. They didn't break the rules or stomp off and start a competing storefront Grand Lodge of Chapel Hill Incorporated. They worked within the system, dreamed big, worked very hard, and then they left American Freemasonry better than they found it. The only consequence is what we do.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that. If you're anything like me, you definitely loved it. There's nothing, I think, that gives us more validation for Masonic education today than having guys like Stephen L. Harrison and guys like Chris Hodapp and guys like Todd Kreese and these guys who are immensely influential within our fraternity are kind of giving their advice on where they think the sale should go. And luckily for us, we've got some leadership who is listening. So huge thanks once again goes out to Brother Hodapp for your excellent work, just in general, and especially a big thanks for taking some time to put this together for us. And next up, we've got this neat piece that I actually found on a website, Gnosis Freemasonry. But first, let's go right into this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison.
Ray Vaughan Denslow lived from 1885 to 1960. He was one of our most prolific Masonic authors. In addition to his many books and articles on Freemasonry, he was, among other things, Missouri's Grand Master in 1932 and served as General Grand Chapter High Priest of Royal Arch Masons International from 1942 to 1945. While going through his papers recently, I found this item, which I want to share with you. I was born in antiquity, in the ancient days when men first dreamed of God. I have been tried through the ages and found true. The crossroads of the world bear the imprint of my feet, and the cathedrals of all nations mark the skill of my hands. I strive for beauty and for symmetry. In my heart is wisdom and strength and courage for those who ask. Upon my altars is the book of Holy Writ, and my prayers are to the one omnipotent God. My sons work and pray together, without rank or discord, in the public mart and in the inner chamber. By signs and symbols, I teach the lessons of life and of death, and the relationship of man with God and of man with man. My arms are widespread to receive those of lawful age and good report who seek me of their own free will. I accept them and teach them to use my tools in the building of men, and thereafter find direction in their own quest for perfection, so much desired and so difficult to attain. I lift up the fallen and shelter the sick. I hark to the orphan's cry, the widow's tears, the pain of the old and destitute. I am not church, nor party, nor school, yet my sons bear a full share of responsibility to God, to country, to neighbor, and themselves. They are free men, tenacious of their liberties, and alert to lurking danger. At the end, I commit them as each one undertakes the journey beyond the veil into the glory of everlasting life. I ponder the sands within the glass and think how small is a single life in the eternal universe. Always have I taught immortality, and even as I raise men from darkness to light, I am a way of life. I am Freemasonry. Ray V. Denslow, 1933. And for the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
So here I am, two 33rd degree guys on our show. And yeah, I don't know how I'm supposed to live up to that, but here we go. We're going to read this great piece from Gnosis Masonry entitled, Does Freemasonry Endorse the Ideals Behind Immortality? By Hank Crasher. This topic is often brought up in many of my private conversations. The simple answer is no and yes. On the surface, the simple answer is no. You see, the ideals that support the teaching of immortality are clearly not immediately visible. In fact, finding immortal teachings requires a key. The general teachings or understandings that most people have regarding this topic often misguide even the most diligent researchers. I can comfortably say this, because even my own research was misguided. That was until I understood the key. You see, I went into studying the ancient mysteries from a pure Christian perspective regarding immortality, that being the soul separated from the body upon death led to immortality of the soul. This singular perspective perverted my research for years. In truth, it was not until my third reading of Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma, 1872, did I even understand that he was writing about different types of immortality. Yes, you read that correctly. There is more than one type of immortality. There is, of course, the commonly taught type of immortality, that being upon death, the soul separates into an immortal state. Nevertheless, there is also the idea of an eternal physical state, as well as other varying degrees of immortality. The former being that the body can live much longer than originally thought. The human body is designed to regenerate. However, most people are taught that the principles of death, which guides their subconscious conditioning, leading to an inevitable early death. Nevertheless, there is a yes equation to the question as well. Freemasonry does, in fact, teach many immortal principles. Case in point, when Pike writes about immortality of the soul, he may, in fact, be writing about the division of the soul upon death. However, there is also the ancient belief that the soul is only of effective use while the body is alive. Therefore,
there is a dual meaning in the immortality of the soul. Moreover, when he writes about immortality as a standalone topic, he may be writing about the three different meanings, and perhaps even more levels. The first being what I like to call life extension. For instance, life extension like immortality. A little history lesson is in order for this idea to make sense. In our historical past, say the Middle Ages, the average lifespan was about 30 and 40 years old. Therefore, when one generation witnessed someone much older living multiple generations, they simply referred to him as immortal. As such, an immortal was a person who simply lived two to three times longer than the average person did. As well, we have accounts of others living hundreds and even thousands of years. The second type of immortality, as mentioned previously, is the nurturing the soul of a living human. The soul is to be nurtured while the person is alive in order to reach a higher level of enlightenment. The purer the soul, the higher that person reaches in his understanding of not only God, but also his position in the world. This purity enables him to live a longer and more fulfilled life than, say, a person who lives a negative life. Interestingly, My Scottish Rite Valley reads a list of brothers who passed away at the end of each year. While reading, I pay close attention to the ages of these departed brothers. Inevitably, most of the ages range between 90 and 105. I find this most fascinating. These men simply lived good Masonic lives, and as a result, lived much longer than the average man does. How is this possible? Simply stated, one lives longer when he is good, does good deeds, and spreads the love upon the earth. Yet, if they only study the mysteries deeper, they may have in fact lived even longer. Moreover, the third type of immortality is that of which I was taught as a young man. In essence, the soul is to be purified before death in order to have an afterlife. Otherwise, your soul will not ascend to heaven. Now, I am not dismissing any of these ideas. The first two are very similar. The idea that one must purify his soul in order to extend his life extension, aligns well with the simply living a good life. As well, I have no problem with the idea that if life extension is not attained, the alternative is an everlasting life in heaven. I really do not think it is an all-or-nothing question. In support of my argument, we will now turn to Manly P. Hall, who probably said it best when he wrote, quote, "But as the way for the redemption of the soul is concealed by the mysteries, so the secrets of the redemption of metals are also concealed, that they may not fall into the hands of the profane and thereby be perverted." End quote. Manly P. Hall, Secret Teachings of All Ages, 1928, page 105. In short, the concepts surrounding this soul are not fully understood by most people, that there are most certainly mysteries yet to unfold, and that they are hidden for a reason, which is to keep them from the profane. It should also be understood, there is a theory, that one must also purify his body in order to attain an immortal state. This is where the principles of alchemy come in, but that subject will be discussed at a later time period. So would it be. Hank Kreicher. Now that's it for this week. I did want to mention, you know, in that previous piece there, we had a couple of ideas. Number one was this sort of idea about profane. Now the profane isn't to say like just people who are uninitiated. The profane, that is the literal definition, but really what we're talking about are people who just aren't cognitively ready for those kind of revelations. There are built-in mechanisms to help people cope with many things, and ideas also have those kinds of coping mechanisms. I hope you all enjoyed this program. We kind of tied things together very neatly this week. If you'll notice, Denslow was talked about in Hodapp's piece, and then Harrison had a piece on Denslow, which touched on immortality, and then we went into this piece about immortality and Freemasonry. I hope you enjoyed this again. If you like this show, please consider supporting our show. We are supported through a number of ways. You can make a one-time contribution to the program, whatever amount you'd like. You can also set up a recurrent donation. You can be a contributor at $2 a month, a fellow at $5, or at $10 a month, you can become a producer of this program. And all of that helps to bring us a program which is free from garbage ads and things you're not interested in, and really tie together whatever they're offering to this fraternity. So I hope you enjoy what we do offer in content for some of the promotions that we get through our Masonic friends and family. In addition, if you like to get a little something for your contribution, you can consider getting a lapel pin, a money clip, or cufflinks. Those all ship direct to you from me. I hand package every single shipment, and I just want to thank everybody out there who is a contributor, who's bought pins, who's gone to onnitlabs.com and used our promo code. Now, our promo code is out of commission at the moment, but they are working on it, so they will fix that shortly. And of course, Banker's Best. This is a business that's owned by a brother who has products that speak to brothers as well as anybody else, really. And it's quality stuff, good prices. He even gives us a discount if you use the promo code BBWCY357 at checkout. You get 20% off. He kicks back a little bit to the show. And also, if you buy like the King Solomon's Beard Balm or oil, there's even more that comes back to the show. So that's another way you can help support. And if that's not enough, we have an upcoming sponsorship / affiliate happening that's coming from a brother. And I'm going to have this guy on the show. It's really going to target our guys who are into reading, our intellectual brothers who are really digging into research and want to understand things in Socratic ways. So I'll have more on that as we work out our agreement, but it's going to be a fantastic way to dive into some classic works and fund this show in a huge, huge way. So that's it, guys. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us this week and for taking the time to contemplate some of the subjects we've touched on today. I think we really touched on quite a few things that are always on our minds. Until next week. Stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.